from Portland, Oregon. This is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rocky Roll. Coming up this episode, last week marked 30 years since the death of Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson of blessed memory, known to many simply as the Rebbe. For more than 40 years, the Rebbe led the Chabad-Lubavitch movement. His vision ushered it to international prominence, and his wisdom and warmth made him one of the most influential Jewish leaders of the 20th century. To get a broader sense of the Rebbe's legacy, both around the world and here locally, I talked to Rabbi Monty Wilhelm of Chabad of Oregon. We looked at the history of Chabad, how the Rebbe's legacy continues to influence Chabad's work worldwide, and why that work is so meaningful to him personally. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, presenting PDX Pathways. Portland's premier Jewish young adult networking and mentorship program is back for its seventh cohort beginning this fall, and applications are open now. Learn more in today's Jewish Review newspaper and apply online at jewishportland.org. Now, here's Rabbi Monty Wilhelm. Rabbi Monty Wilhelm, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you here. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
It's a great question. You know, in Judaism, we're taught that we have two relationships with our Judaism. It's called, there's Zeh Keli V'Anvehu, which is, this is my God. This is my God, my relationship with my Judaism. And then there's what's called Elokei Avi, the God of my fathers. And that's the Judaism that we receive from our fathers, from our past, from our, you know, from our history, from our upbringing and all. And I think for me, it's been a lot of both. Starting with the first is the God of my fathers. So today is actually the 21st Yahrzeit, the 21st anniversary of passing of my grandfather. And when he was 16 years old, Avram David Wilhelm, he was standing in line to the gas chambers. His time was had come. And for some reason, unbeknownst to anybody, they needed about 30 people, and they just pulled them out of the line. And that moment is one of those moments of the God of my fathers. It's one of those moments that shaped our family and shaped our Jewish journey. And today, that grandfather, whose 21st Yahrzeit is today, from that one man who was pulled out of the gas chambers, there's now 300 descendants.
I'm sure his memory is a blessing for all of them.
His memory is a blessing, but more than a blessing, it's a teaching, and it's a moment and a story of faith, a story of a man who saw it all and yet came out and built a Jewish family and educated his children Jewishly and went on to build this family which is now, like I said, numbers in the hundreds. So it's both a blessing and an empowerment. That's the God of my fathers. And then we speak about this as my God. And what's your own relationship with your Judaism? And each of every one of us, and even those who grow up like myself, three out of my four grandparents were Holocaust survivors, but who emerged with a great sense of conviction to continue, with a great sense of faith. We also, my fourth grandparent, my grandmother, who's still alive, and may she continue to be healthy.
Indeed.
She was went through Stalinist Russia, so she went through her own journey. Mm-hmm. But all of them came out with this conviction to build. And then there's the moments of, this is my God, so what am I going to do with that, or how does that impact me? So I'll tell you an interesting anecdote. So 21 years ago today, my grandfather was killed in a car accident in Brooklyn. It was Erev Shabbat. He was doing Shabbat preparations. He was 74 years old, and he was driving. He got hit by a car. It was 4th of July weekend, and he was killed. When he died, when I heard about it, I was in Australia at the time. And it was one of those moments of just almost disbelief. Like, how is it that a man who survives the gas chamber lines is killed in Brooklyn in a car accident? And it was one of those moments that I had to lean into, this is my God, and this is my faith. And I had to take all of those teachings about the idea that ultimately we have a time and there is a plan and there's a destiny set out for us. And if we're meant to live 74 years, then that's how much it's going to be. Then the Nazis won't make that shorter, but being in Brooklyn won't make that longer. So that was one of those moments of, this is my God.
So speaking of yard sites, we've recently observed the Rebbe's yard site, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson of blessed memory. I want to go back in time before we talk about him to what Chabad, the organization that he built, looked like before he came along.
So Chabad is, I wouldn't say the Rebbe built Chabad, but the Rebbe leads and greatly expands it. Chabad goes back about 250 years. It's one of the streams that come out of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, which is the teachings of Chassidut, the teachings of focusing on a Judaism that's joyful, that's meaningful, that every person can find their connection with the Creator, that every person can find their connection with Torah, that every person can find the connection with their soul's purpose. And the first Chabad Rebbe, the first Chabad leader, is Rabbi Shneur Zalman. And he lives in the late 1700s, dies in the 1812. And at that time, he writes the canon of Chabad philosophy, known as the Tanya. And it's really a manual for every Jew to be able to access their own and develop their own personal relationship with the divine, with their Judaism and with the Creator. And it's one that's there for every single Jew. You don't have to be like a great scholar to have a relationship with Hashem. You don't have to be a great philanthropist. Simply, every person, every Jew has a natural relationship because the Jewish soul and just being one of God's creations is the most empowering thing that we are. So as Chabad develops throughout the years, the idea of the focus of not just having a community, but focusing on the whole of the Jewish people is very prevalent, both taking care of the physical needs of the Jewish people and taking care of the spiritual needs of the Jewish people. And as we are getting closer to kind of the rise of the isms, communism, socialism, all the different isms, the Chabad Rebbe at that time, Rabbi Shneur Dovber, starts a yeshiva. And he talks to the students and he says that essentially this is not just the yeshiva, but we're forming essentially an army. An army that's going to go out and it's going to be leaders in the future of Judaism, because he sees that very, very clearly. The future of Judaism is going to be one that we're going to need great leadership to get us through very, very challenging times. And that's what happens with both where he is with the rise of communism and, of course, then the Holocaust. And when the Rebbe, our Rebbe, becomes the Rebbe, this is already in the United States, and in 1950, so Chabad is already looking and taking care and trying to see what can be done for the Jewish people. But at this time, there's a level of urgency and there's a crisis that the world has never seen. There's a lack of Jewish leadership, a lack of Jewish infrastructure. Remember, so much has been destroyed. And the Rebbe essentially starts off and with the mission of we're embracing every Jew where they are and trying to serve needs of the Jewish people and of the Jewish community. The first shaliach that the Rebbe sends out is to North Africa, to Morocco at the time, because there's a very old Jewish community, there's a historic Jewish community, but its leadership and its development was in decline. And the Rebbe sends a young couple there, and this was already kind of planned in the life of the previous Rebbe, spoken about in the life of the previous Rebbe. He sends a young couple there with the mission to do what he can for Jewish community there. And they build schools, and they build all types of Jewish infrastructure over there. And essentially, until 1967, it's a flourishing Jewish community. Later on, many of those people make Aliyah. But that type of embrace of looking at the needs of Jewish life and the needs of Jewish community and sending out couples to tend to those needs is something that the Rebbe starts very, very vigorously. In the beginning of his leadership, his mission statement is that the love of the Jewish people, the love of God, and the love of Torah are one. We can't separate between the people the teachings and the Creator, and very, very passionately, he dedicates himself to taking care of those needs. So the Rebbe starts to send out young couples, be it Morocco or, you know, be it Seattle or Miami or LA or Texas, or, and eventually in 1984 to Portland.
And that's where your family comes in.
That's where my family comes in. So in 1984, my parents are sent over here. And of course, we always tell the story how my parents at that time were living in Australia temporarily after they were married. They're in Australia. They're on an assignment there, which is going to be a three-year assignment. And about 2.5 years in, they come back and they spend the holidays with the Rebbe. This was like the holidays of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And they ask the Rebbe's office for an assignment. They want a permanent assignment. And, you know, it's a little back and forth. They're assigned to the state of Oregon. And at that time, my father comes into the Rebbe's chief secretary. His name was Rabbi Chadakov. And he says, congratulations, you've been assigned to the state of Oregon. And he says, in Yiddish, he says, well, when are you planning to move out? And my father says, well, we're planning to go back to Australia, finish our term there. And in a couple of months around Passover time, we're going to move Melbourne, Portland. And he tells my father, he says, well, Efshar Hastunish Farshtanen, perhaps you didn't understand something. He says, imagine you call the fire department and you say, well, there's a fire. And they say, well, in 6 months, we have somebody to come to the fire. He says, there are Jewish children in Portland who don't yet have a Jewish education. You need to go there, and you need to take care of those kids. And he says, call your friends in Australia, let them pack up your bags, and let them meet you in Portland. So shortly thereafter, my parents move here, and 1 year later, the boat from Australia arrives.
So I guess interrupting the narrative of Chabad's growth in Oregon, which I'd like to get to, but I think that that anecdote speaks to the sense of urgency that the Rebbe had for fostering and taking care of Jewish life around the world.
Yes. I think the sense of urgency, exactly like you said, was something that the Rebbe highlighted and brought out. You know, one of the taglines, or one of the slogans almost, that the Rebbe really leaned into, it started with a bunch of kids who had come from camp, from summer camp. And in the summer camp, they made this song, and it was, the theme was, or this, the line was, we want Mashiach now. And it was a summer camp song, and I think it was like a play on some other song. Now, kids can say that. But the Rebbe actually really embraced that idea of we want Mashiach now, and encouraged that idea, and others found it like shocking, like, now? I mean, you're talking to God, you're talking to the Jewish people, the Jewish mission. And the Rebbe himself used this slogan in some of his most esoteric talks, in some of his discourses, and he would conclude them sometimes, and he would talk about the idea of now. Because the big idea is that Jewish history is not just a cyclical history, it's a linear history. It's a story of we're going from where the world is, and we're supposed to take it in a certain direction to where the world is supposed to be. And we have to feel that urgency. We have to feel that sense of now. We have to do that now. There isn't time to wait. And we ask God, and we say, we want Mashiach now. We want to move this forward, and we do that with a great sense of urgency, because all of Jewish history, all of history, is waiting for us to move it forward now.
And if I understand correctly, that's the motivation behind the mitzvot campaign that the Rebbe started, which is, I think, a lot of people's first interaction with Chabad is maybe somebody on a street corner asking if they, are you Jewish? Have you put on tefillin today? Things like that.
100%. 100%. The idea of the opportunity to change the world can be done right now. And really that campaign is a expression of the teaching of Maimonides. Maimonides writes that we should always see the world hanging in balance. And our next step can tip the world in favor of the good. Our very next action. And so the idea of the mitzvah campaign is this idea that you don't have to change your whole life or think about everything that's going on right now or necessarily think about the direction of the whole world. What's your next action? Put on tefillin now. Light the Shabbos candles this week. Put one mezuzah up, two mezuzahs up. One mitzvah can actually tip the world in the favor of the good.
That's a beautiful way to look at it. So clearly the Rebbe's vision, I think it's fair to say, altered the course of Jewish history. And it's now been 30 years since he passed, and that vision clearly lives on. What are the ways that Chabad has really grown and moved forward in the decades since the Rebbe's passing?
Yeah. You know, great leaders, they only get started during their lifetime. Because a lifetime is very short, so great leaders, their leadership and their visions extend far beyond their lifetime. And we see this with the Rebbe, where in his lifetime, so there's about perhaps 2,000 Chabad shluchim who go out. Now, there are 6,500 shluchim families. If you do all the math, in other words, talk about how many people that is, there's about 50,000 people in the field. And that's just the beginning. I mean, those people's role is not just to be the ambassadors, but it's to kind of empower everybody else to remind 15 million Jews, 16 million Jews, that each and every one of us are ambassadors of Judaism. Each and every one of us are Jewish leaders. So this impact that the Rebbe has over the past 30 years clearly grows and grows. And here in Oregon, in 1994, at the time of the Rebbe's passing, there is one Chabad house, actually not too far away from these offices. It's located down Shoals Ferry. It's in Beaverton at the time. And there's that one Chabad house, and there's two Chabad families. Now we have 15 Chabad houses and 16 families that are representing them. So, and that's just the story of one state. I mean, this is happening everywhere because the urgency for Jewish education, this message that, you know, the Rebbe's secretary told my father, like, Jewish children need Jewish education, that's only gotten much, much more significant since then.
Mm-hmm. And Chabad's been there to meet that need. We have a Chabad school here in Portland, Chabad preschool, Chabad day camps, which yeah. You're engaged with today.
Yes, I just came from dropping off the kids at Sky Zone, and they're jumping as we talk. But there's actually three Chabad day camps here. I'm engaged with the one in the Southwest, and there's one in Northeast, and there's one in Clark County. So,
well, you mentioned, when you speak about those that the Rebbe sent out and who have gone out after him, you specifically say families and couples. Tell me about the role that what makes that family unit, that partnership of husband and wife and their kids along with, so important to Chabad's mission and work?
A great question. You know, there's two parts to that. First of all, is the number one role of a Chabad family is to model Jewish life. And to be models of Jewish life, it's not just to teach or to espouse ideas, but it's to show how it's done. And Judaism is lived as a family. It's a lived experience. Judaism is primarily lived in the home, primarily through, you know, the family, through whether it's the holidays or the kashrut, even in the laws of mikvah that touch upon the intimacy and the, you know, having children. The whole model of Jewish life is a model of families. You know, the night that the Jewish people went out of Egypt 3,300 years ago, before they go out, they're told to gather as families. And that becomes the model of the Seder. The model of Judaism is it's a family experience. So the idea of going as a family, of living as a family, of modeling as a family, is inherent to Judaism itself. What's very impactful is that the Rebbe also empowers not only the rabbis, who are known as shluchim, but the women are independently known as shluchot, as emissaries, as ambassadors, and as those who have an independent mission and an ability to affect. And today, we see that the woman's leadership is far more impactful than that of the men, because we're talking about the crisis of education. We're talking about a crisis in the lived experience of Judaism. And for that, we need women who really can talk to that. That's something that's very, very unique.
Well, speaking of unique, we've touched on this a little bit already, but I'll ask you directly, what is it that makes Chabad's work so unique in the Jewish world?
I think it's the idea that It has a single mission, and that's just to apply Torah to our times. Chabad's role is not necessarily to build institutions. It's not necessarily to build infrastructure, community. Those things may or may not be necessary in the place that they are. You know, if they're in Ukraine, then they're dealing with food crises today. If they're in Israel, they're dealing with trauma and security today. But inherently, the mission is simply to apply Torah to our times. And in a sense, it's just Judaism itself. There's nothing else to it. It's not, you know, it's not a means to anything else other than saying, what does Judaism need in this community? How can we make Judaism stronger in our community? How can we make Jewish people prouder in our community? But simply through just applying Torah to our times.
That's a singular mission, but I think you'd have to agree, a broad one, which I think is beautifully expressed in the variety of programs and events and services that you see from Chabad houses. No two Chabad houses are the same anywhere.
True. Like you're saying, there isn't a specific program or an idea. We're not here to build preschools. If preschool education is needed, then preschools are what it's at. If kosher meat is needed, then bringing in kosher meat is what it's at. So it's about making Judaism accessible and applying Judaism to our times. It's really about moving forward that now, moving forward the idea that the Jewish people are on a mission to take the world from what it is to where it has to go. That's what we're asking ourselves. How can we do that today?
Well, that sort of touches into my next question. We've marked 30 years since the Rebbe's passing. What do you see in the future of Chabad's work in the next 30 years?
You know, in Chabad, we talk about now. It's hard to think about the next 30 years. But what I see as the now is the question of how do we inspire and connect the Jewish people with their Judaism. And I'll tell you a little anecdote. When I was graduating from yeshiva, you know, our class, I kind of saw ourselves as almost like a bridge generation. It seemed like the past was so full of incredible history and stories, and the future would bring something. But the now, it almost seemed kind of boring. And suddenly, over the past couple of years, we have a pandemic that's turned over and completely altered the way that the world works, the way that we think about our world, the dependability of our world. And on the heels of that pandemic, we have this war in Israel that we kind of thought was a thing of the past. I forgot to insert, you know, first came the war in Ukraine, where we, you know, we didn't think that just, you know, cities in Europe were just going to be bombed, and it was back. And now we have the war in Israel. So suddenly, it was one of those moments like that moment, you know, when my grandfather was hit by a car, where I had to lean into myself. And we each had to do this as Jews. We had to say, well, there's the Judaism of our fathers. There's the Judaism of the past. But what about the Judaism of now? And how are we talking to this now? And how are we encouraging the Jewish people, nurturing their faith now, and connecting people with their sense of purpose, their sense of mission, sense of hope, sense of urgency that we are indeed going to bring the world to the place that it's supposed to be? And by the way, I only mentioned the kind of real pandemics and wars that we've seen. But we are going through a crisis of unprecedented questioning of purpose, of mission. Teen suicide rates are really climbing rapidly. A lot of that is because people don't have and aren't connecting with a sense of why. So our work is, and it's important as ever and perhaps more important. And I think that to move forward, what we're going to do and what has to be done is to reach out and to try to connect more of our people with their teachings, with their Judaism, with that sense of purpose, and empowering them with the ability to be a part of changing the world, to be one of the ambassadors of the future.
I think that's as good an answer to that question as one could hope for.
Thank you.
So Chabads all over the world have created, are known for creating deeply meaningful experiences for all kinds of Jews. But I want to ask you, what are some of the really meaningful experiences that you've gotten to have as a Chabad rabbi?
You know, one of those, I remember I was putting on tefillin with a fellow. I was still a yeshiva student. And as we're putting on tefillin, he shows me the number on his arm. And it was one of those moments that he was talking to me about not having been connected for a long time and the ability to kind of reconnect him and bring out that sense of connection with the Jewish people, bring out that sense of connection with the history, destiny of the Jewish people. It was just like one of those special moments. I think that I'm fortunate to experience a lot of those moments of connection. For me, I also direct the Gan preschool in the executive role, and watching children engage with their Judaism, teaching children about putting a coin in a tzedakah box. There's everything there. There's the moment of the action that's being done right now, like the Maimonides spoke about, you know, this may be the next action that may tip the world in favor. There's the moment of connection that the child is empowered and knows that they can make a difference, that they're able to do an act of tzedakah. Those are very powerful moments.
I want to go back for a moment. When you say the number on the arm, that's I'm guessing that refers to a tattoo that this gentleman received at a concentration camp,
right,
in the former Nazi Reich.
Yeah. Yes. So he had been a Holocaust survivor. He'd been very detached. He had been questioning his relationship with God for many, many years. And I just had the moment. It was just, I had the opportunity to kind of talk with him and offer him the opportunity to put on tefillin. And we actually did. It was actually, it was outdoors. It was on a street corner. It wasn't in a shul, and it wasn't connected to any life cycle experience or anything. It was just a moment of, you know, excuse me, sir, are you Jewish? And we put on the tefillin there. But years and years of trauma or pain, confusion, suddenly came, kind of melted away as we did that, and it was a very powerful moment.
I can believe it. Going back to the preschool kids, I think that ties into the question of the future. So how the future is obviously unknown, though. I mean, if it wasn't, my job would be a lot easier, certainly. But in the work that Chabad does, particularly in education, we've mentioned repeatedly how important education is. We don't know the future, but we can prepare for it. And that's one of the big ways, I think, that Chabad does that, is preparing for a Jewish future through education of tomorrow's Jewish people, Jewish leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're right. We cannot know the future. What we can know is that we come from a very storied past. It's been all over the map, both geographically, but also just experientially. We've had all different types of experiences. The common denominator has been Torah, has been the transmission of our teachings, has been the transmission of faith. And that has sustained us for over 3,300 years. So we know that if we just connect our future, if we can connect our children, if we can connect ourselves with Torah, whatever the future brings, that's our miracle pill. That's what's going to sustain us. That's what's going to keep us. And that's what connects us as a nation.
Well, that's as good as an idea as I can think of to end on. Rabbi Moti Wilhelm, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Rabbi Podcast.
It's been an honor. Thank you, Rabbi.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. Thank you so much to Rabbi Moti Wilhelm for his time and wisdom. You can learn more about Chabad's philosophy and programs, as well as the Rebbe's life and legacy, online at Chabad.org, and find links to all of Oregon's Chabad houses in the Federation's Community Directory at jewishportland.org/community-directory. If you liked this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karon Blau-Rothstein. Special thanks to Daniel Burke. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.